This will get to the line. It's out this time. Burnside takes the shot shorthanded. Saved by Parisini. Burnside gets the rebound, and he scores.
Welcome to Junior, Sportsnet CHL Podcast with your host, Jeff Marek.
Welcome once again to Junior, your weekly CHL podcast. I'm Jeff Marek. On this show, Sam Cosentino drops by. We'll look back at the weekend that was. On Friday Night Hockey, we had Niagara and Ottawa. Sunday, we had Kingston and Mississauga. We'll get into that discussion with Sam Cosentino. This week, of course, Friday, on Friday Night Hockey, we have Cape Breton and St. John's. Sunday, we're back in Mississauga for the Steelheads as they face off against Mackenzie Blackwood and the Barrie Colts. Sam will also have news and notes from around the CHL. Daryl Young is the St. John's Sea Dogs general manager. That team, as we record today, is surging, winners of seven in a row, with prospects like Luke Green and Nathan Noel leading the way. They already have NHL-bound players like Jakub Zboril and Thomas Chabot. St. John's seem to be clicking right now in the QMJHL's Maritime Division. They face off against Cape Breton, as I mentioned, on Friday Night Hockey. And also, Nathan Bastian will stop by. He plays on a line with the Mississauga Steelheads with Michael McLeod and Alexander Nylander. What's exceptional about this line? Well, it's one of the best in the OHL, and all three players are draft eligible. McLeod and Nylander may just sneak both into the top 10. Nylander certainly will be there. Nathan Bastian is in the conversation in the top 30 as well. So Nathan Bastian will join us to talk about his ascent in the draft rankings and also his play with the Mississauga Steelheads. Matthew Barzal is a 16th overall draft pick of the New York Islanders at last year's draft in Florida. Also top centerman for the Seattle Thunderbirds in the Western Hockey League. Don't sleep on Seattle. That has been a mantra around this podcast for a long time. Matthew Barzal will stop by a little bit later on this week's podcast. In the meantime, we'll start the show as we do each and every week with Sam Cosentino. Sam, how are you today, bud? Big two games on the weekend.
Oh, yeah, doing great. Nice to get to see Mississauga. Nice to get to see Kingston as well. So it was a match that turned out not exactly as I expected, but good for James Boyd and his crew. Worked out well for them. And then the Friday night game was a rather interesting one as well. You know, you get to look at Ottawa kind of in the middle of the rebuild after Travis Konecny leaves, and we saw some real good signs from Sasha Chmielewski, who I think is just going to be a dynamite player in the league. Already is a very good player at 16, but I think he's got a real bright future ahead of him. And you know, after spending some time with Jeff Brown, you got the opportunity to see what he's trying to build and what he's looking towards. And you know, he kind of chart out their top six forwards for next year with Rimshaw and Salaturo likely back. It's looking pretty good.
Would they have a shot, Sam? Because we keep hearing about certainly Windsor and they're the heavyweights. Would they have a shot at the Memorial Cup next year?
Hosting,
I'm talking about, hosting.
No, and that's a wonderful question, Jeff. And to be honest with you, I don't know if the owners are in that headspace right now. I mean, mm-hmm. Soccer team just kind of got rolling. The football team just unbelievable year for their football team. I think they've really kind of moved their focus towards that. I mean, you go in the building, and the top-level suites that used to be, you know, suites for corporations and, you know, pretty big section for the media, most of it has been condemned to the point where it needs massive renovation still to get done. It's going to cost a lot of money to do that. I'm not sure if the owners are in that headspace. Could they do it without that? Maybe, but they'd still have to do stuff in terms of press box, press seating, the ability to sell a little bit better corporate setup. I don't know if the infrastructure as it stands today would allow for that to happen. Having said that, you know, you look at easy place to fly into, obviously hotels are there, infrastructure's there, the building's big enough to hold crowds, big enough, all that stuff is in place. Will a team quite be where it's going to need to be? Probably not, because the impression I got from Jeff Brown is that 2018 is kind of their, you know, where they're looking to peak. Could that process be sped up? Yeah, with all the picks they have, sure. You could probably speed it up and get it ready for 2017. But I'll be honest with you, there's just too many things that are on the fringe for me. Ownership and whether they want to go there. The infrastructure, like everything around it, is good, but the rink still needs a bump, and then the team probably needs a bump. So it's three different elements that that would have to be taken into serious consideration before they move forward with a hosting scenario.
So Windsor then. That seems to be the one. Although, you know, I keep hearing that to not be surprised if London bids.
Well, why wouldn't you? And maybe even Kitchener at that point, you know. Why wouldn't you? I mean, the thing that those markets have going for them is that they've hosted successfully, and they always have good teams. You know, I guess at that point, why wouldn't Mississauga try and do the same? It's going to be a bit of a mad scramble, Jeff, because in 2018, we're all aware that at somehow, some way, the format of the MasterCard Memorial Cup is going to change, probably closer to an NCAA format, although I think there's still some discussions on exactly how that's going to be worked out. So 2017 is going to be a year where people are, you know, what few teams there are that will be in the hunt to bid, they're going to want to do it upright, because who knows? It might be the last of its kind in the four-team setup as we currently note it, as we currently have it, you know, dating back to 1972. So you'd probably want to do a bang-up job, do something a little extra special, make sure the building is all sold out and all sort of things. And that's what lends to Kitchener, London bidding again. You know, Mississauga hosted very successfully. I mean, Owen Sound probably had a big part in that in terms of filling in the seats and the crowds and that sort of thing. But I think things are a little bit different under Elliot Kerr. I think he's got the opportunity, the connections, the corporate support, that he might be able to do it bigger and better than what happened in 2011. Of course, the infrastructure's there. I'm pretty confident that the team is going to be there based on what I saw on Sunday afternoon. And guys like Haig and Tippett with a year of experience under their belt. So that element might be in place too. But, Jeff, it really looks like a really short list for what's going to happen in the hosting scenario for 2017.
You know, that is interesting too. Certainly Mississauga, and as we talked about on TV on the weekend, I mean, it seems as if they're heading to a collision course with Windsor next year. So Windsor's got a shot at hosting this thing. Kitchener is an interesting one too. I had a conversation with someone over the weekend about Kitchener and why they didn't do more at OHL trade deadline. And the feeling that I got was that in Kitchener's mind, they think as good as they are this year, they have a chance to be even better next season.
Yeah,
that next year might just be the as much as it was, they're a fantastic team this year, but as good as they are right now, they may even be better next year.
That's just it. So, you know, if you're looking at Kitchener, its current scenario, you're saying, hey, I'm not going to go absolutely all out. We like the team we have, and we know we don't have to give up too much of the future to continue forward with this team. We're at least a second-round team. This is me paraphrasing what Kitchener's probably thinking. Yet we still feel very strongly about what we have moving forward. So they might very well be in the mix, Jeff. And again, usually the strongest consideration, as we've seen recently, is the team. And that's why Brent Sutter was gung-ho on making all the deals he did. You know, you have the 2013 Saskatoon thing in the back of your mind, but you're also thinking, hey, you know, we promised the league a good team, and, you know, we're not quite there yet, so we go out and make a couple of deals, and I think they're there now. So when it comes to Kitchener, are they going to have that part in place? Yeah, probably will, because they didn't go gung-ho or go super crazy this year.
Heard a theory on the Robbie Fabry trade. I'm going to bounce this one off you.
Yeah, I know. I listened to the guys at the intermission. What do you think?
What do you think of? So just for people that didn't get a chance to watch the show, the feeling out there is, considering Kitchener gave up a third-round draft pick and potential of two other high draft picks should he arrive to the Guelph Storm for the rights to Robbie Fabry, the feeling is this, that if there is a potential trade for someone like, well, Jonathan Drouin, for example, and that's the obvious candidate to St. Louis, going the other way would be potentially Robbie Fabry. The feeling is that Tampa wouldn't have a roster spot available for Robbie Fabry, and then they would send him back to Junior, where his rights are now held by the Kitchener Rangers. What could give this one legs is when you consider that there must be, one would imply, some intel between Al MacInnis of the St. Louis Blues, his son Ryan plays with the Kitchener Rangers, so there's an information pipeline there. To me, I still think it's a long shot, but that's the scenario that makes sense to me, Sam. What about you?
Well, it does. I mean, you know, so many pieces have to fall into place for that all to happen, and it's not to say that they couldn't, but man, and then everyone would have to agree to it. So that's the other element. You mean the pieces might fall into place, and then there might be a snag. Oh, we don't necessarily agree. We don't think this is the right idea, so on and so forth. But you know, you look at the price. If it's simply a price of just giving up a third-round pick and nothing happens, why wouldn't you if you're Kitchener? And if you do get a guy like Fabry for the last, month and a half playoffs, then it's definitely worthy of the other picks given up, considering all the trades that have been made and the picks that have exchanged hands for the likes of Konechny and Dylan Sadoway and that sort of thing in the Ontario Hockey League. So it does make sense in all of those regards. If there's some intel there, Luke Opelka is a St. Louis pick. I don't know if he ends up in Kitchener without the likes of, Al McGinnis and Ryan McGinnis and Mike Van Ryan and, Steve Binkowski and Murray Ebert and all those guys come to that sort of agreement. So it could definitely happen again. To me right now, it's a bit of a stretch. How many 10, 11, 12 goal scores are there in the National Hockey League? If you broke it down, even including defensemen and whatever else, I don't think the list is ridiculously long.
No, it does seem like a long shot, and there are many, and I might count myself as one of them that doesn't think that Robbie Fabry needs to go back to junior for anything. Like, he's an NHL guy.
Yeah.
He can play NHL minutes on an NHL team.
Yeah, you kind of think that's the case. Now, again, if you get in, who knows what kind of scenario, like where he ends up. Is that team in a playoff hunt? Is there injuries? Are they a full lineup? It's pointing in one direction right now. But I don't know. If I'm an NHL general manager and I'm hearing that Robbie Fabry's on the market, maybe I'm trying to make a push for him too.
Yeah.
And so does he end up in the, prescribed location? Possibly. But you know what? I heard what the guy said in the intermission on Sunday. And, obviously they're very connected and their intel is good, and as is yours and mine and whatever else. But every now and then, things happen in the unexpected fashion, and this may be one of those things. But wouldn't that be something if that happened? You'd have to put Kitchener, amongst the front runners. Top two or three front runners. Maybe they're top four or five right now, but they'd probably be amongst the top two if they ended up landing Fabry.
Yeah, that would be absolutely remarkable for the kid. That's just found money. Right away, and you didn't have to give anything up for it other than a third-round pick. And it will cost you a couple more to sweeten the pot, which you'd have to ship over to Guelph, but nonetheless. You mentioned Mississauga a little while ago, and we saw them on Sunday. We will see them again this Sunday facing off against the Barrie Colts. And, we make so much of that top line, and rightfully so. They're all draft eligible, all three. Well, two certainly, and one probably, who will join us a little bit later on the program, Nathan Bastian, will go in the top round. We'll go in round number one of this year's NHL draft. Anything stand out to you about those three on Sunday, Sam?
Well, Nylander, I think, is the real deal. Bastian is sneaky good. Nothing different than what I expected. McLeod maybe a little faster than I thought and a little bit maybe tougher on draws. But some of the stuff I've heard about McLeod is that there are some scouts that are concerned about his finish, and I think we saw bits and pieces of that on Sunday afternoon. So to be honest with you, Jeff, the stuff that I've heard, the stuff that I've seen with my own eyes, nothing out of the ordinary there for me. One guy I was really anxious to see was Nicholas Hague, the big defenseman. I saw him at the Canada camp in August, and I thought he really pushed hard for a spot as an underage guy in that under-18 team. That didn't quite work out for him, but I really like his upside. And the same thing with Owen Tippett. You go to the under-17s, guy's dynamite hat trick in the final game, tournament all-star, so on and so forth. And when he grows into his body, the way he's already got a pro shot, that's really, really good. We were warned a little bit about Ryan McLeod and how he's kind of turned a corner since Christmas, since around the under-17s. He wasn't quite as dynamic as I expected. I think that part of that had to do with the flow of the game and the TV timeouts and him not getting the exact ice that maybe, I expected to see out of him based on the conversations we had with Mississauga's coaching staff before the game. So I'd like to see a little bit more out of him on Sunday. But then again, he's still 2 years away from the draft. So I think there's going to be huge things in store for him next year. So you take that top three guys, you assume that they all come back. Some talk about Nylander or whatever, but let's just assume that they're all going to come back. Add Tippett and Hague to that mix. That's a pretty nice five players to build around, and who knows? It's always the elephant in the room, the Sean Day thing. Does he figure it out? Does he go back next year as a different guy after going to an NHL camp? Because whether he gets drafted or not, he's going to an NHL camp. He's going to get drafted somewhere. And he's going to go to an NHL camp, and who knows? That might be the kick in the pants or the thing that turns the light on for him. And if he comes back and performs to the expectations that everyone had of him 3 years ago, look out. That's
I know.
That's, you know, four or five forwards and two or three defensemen in which to build around, and high-end guys, not just, you know, not schleppers.
No, and that's what makes it so frustrating for Sean Dave, for James Boyd, the coach and general manager. I mean, you know, he's asked to be moved. He tried to make a deal. There was something with Peterborough. That fell through. Wants to go to London, wants to go to Windsor. And, you know, what are you trading? Like, that's the hard part if you're James Boyd. Who is Sean Day is essentially the question we're all asking, because tomorrow the light could go off and he could be the best defenseman in the OHL.
And that's the thing. I'd be terrified in trying to trade him, too, because you're thinking right along with the rest of the group. You know, whoever's going to acquire him is sitting there saying, I'm going to get this guy for a song. And it's that same old story. If the light goes on, look out.
Look out.
Look out. And, yep. And there's no guarantee that the light's going to go on. Sometimes it's just not for some kids. It just doesn't work out that way. The only thing that I wish for him, Jeff, though, on a personal note, is that I wish someone could just throw him ahead 10 years in his life. Throw him ahead to the age of 28, if you will, and say, you know what, when you're 18, all you had to do was this, 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 and this. No one said you had to be the biggest gym rat. No one said this or that. But if you had just done a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and paid a little bit more attention to detail and treated people with dignity and respect, you'd be worth probably at that time 10, 12 million bucks a year.
Yeah.
And as one scout said to me, hey, we're out here trying to make kids millionaires. We're trying to. We want to see that kid help himself try and make himself a millionaire.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny, too, because, you know, in back-to-back CHL games on Sportsnet, you know, we saw two of the poster childs for what you're just talking about, Sean Day and then on Friday, Joshua Hosang, where loaded with skill. That's, no one's ever denied that. And even, you know, Marty Williamson on the podcast last week said, sure, there's things that everyone has to work on. And he has to work on things like, you know, being on time and, you know, respect the teammates and all that kind of stuff. It's like, he's another one of those guys that you wish could have that moment where, you know, you have that out-of-body experience and you flash forward 10 years and you say to yourself, you know what, this is what could be if you put things together.
Yeah, I mean, I was never a great baseball player. I did enough to get by. And I always wondered that, you know, if I had done more of this and more of that, what would I have become? Probably a 40th round pick, a 60th round pick, if you will. That was probably the height of my potential, but who knows what a couple of years in low A ball might have done, or a year in low A ball might have done for me, or altered my career or whatever else. And not that it's a bad scenario now, but sometimes you look back and you don't really have that clarity until later in life. I just hope it doesn't happen for those kids that at 28 they're sitting there saying, oh man, I could have done this, this, and this, and made tons of money, set myself up for life, and all those sorts of things. But you know, the one thing I'll say about both guys, you have to understand that in a team sport, there is some level of conformity. Unfortunately, we can't all just be nonconformists and be artists and think with both sides of the brain and do whatever the heck we want. When you're in a team environment, unfortunately, there is some conformity that goes along with that, and that's kind of what you sign up for. And the more you deviate from that, the more you're looked at as an outlier. And, you know, when you get to the National Hockey League level, there's still a few guys out there that are kind of on their own program, but for the most part, they're conforming. They're showing up on time. You know, they're treating people with dignity and respect and that sort of thing. And, you know, and in the team situation, that's the ultimate thing. Like, why is it that you're allowed to be 10 minutes late? I woke up 10 minutes earlier. I wasn't feeling great today. My body's banged up, but I got to the practice on time. I got to the meeting on time. You're kind of disrespecting me as a teammate if you don't. Why? Because you felt that you didn't need to? Well, no, you're unfortunately, you have to conform, at least to some extent.
Show that you're part of the team. Show that we're all pulling the same way. You know, Sean Day as well, this is interesting because you mentioned whether he's drafted or whether he's not. And I have talked to a couple of scouts who have said, I'm not putting my name next to his when I submit my final list. Let someone else do that. He's going to the top prospects game. And in 1 week's time, Sam, you and I will both be in Vancouver for the top prospects game. Sean Day's on the team. He's on Team Cherry and Jacob Chychrun on that squad. Samuel Girard, Kel Clegg, Lucas Johansson, Marcus Niemelainen from Saginaw make up that defense. But someone who's not on, who's kind of raised an eyebrow, I suppose, around some circles, maybe you call him this year's version of Travis Dermott, who wasn't invited either, is Victor Mete of the London Knights. Are you surprised he's not on the list, yet Sean Day is?
it's a great conversation we had with Dale Hunter a couple of weeks ago when we were in London, and RJ brought it up. Said he was the first guy that popped out of my head as to who's not been included here. Here's the thing. We always talk, like, it's really important to know the process. Teams vote. Players are assigned values based on the team vote. There's a list of the top 40 guys, and the top X number in each position get to go. And then if someone gets injured, the next guy on the list goes. That's all determined by the National Hockey League and how much of those teams participate in the balloting system. If there's a tie, then Central Scouting breaks that tie. That's essentially their only intervention into the whole process. Now, and we have talked about a little bit about this before, if 30 teams, let's say if only 8 teams submit ballots as to who they want to see play, then Central Scouting probably has a little bit of work to do, although those 8 teams are still going to determine who goes to the game. There's going to be a little bit more input on that part in terms of Central Scouting. But I have a stronger feeling that it's much more than that, that it's almost 100% buy-in from the NHL teams. And why wouldn't you? So getting back to that, the National Hockey League teams, essentially, as a group, didn't feel Victor Mete deserved it. And here's the way I look at it, Jeff. When I look at Mete, last year in the second half he took off. And you looked at yourself and said, all right, that's why the Hunters gave up so much to acquire him and get him playing, because this guy's the real deal. He can get up and go. He can join the rush. He can do all sorts of those things. One man breakout, good first pass. And this year, he's built his reputation this year as being a defensive guy. Top plus minus guys in the league, top 5 in that department. And you don't notice as much the offensive side, but it must be there because it was there last year as a 16-year-old. So why wouldn't it be there this year? So maybe because there's less flash and dash to his game, maybe he hasn't drawn that same sort of attention that National Hockey League teams were kind of, interested in last year. But at the end of the day, two things happen, Jeff. The Travis Dermott situation, where you don't get invited, you prove everybody wrong, and you end up going in the second round. Or somebody gets hurt, and you end up getting included into the game. And not that I ever want to hope that anyone gets hurt, but it's almost inevitable that every year we have 2 or 3 injuries over this weekend, the weekend that's coming up, and you'll see replacements. And I can't see Victor Mete being too far down that list outside of the top 12 defensemen that have already been included.
It's interesting, too, because one of those players where, injuries open a door, and he had a really good game and started to distinguish himself in the second half. We had him once on the CHL on Sportsnet. Ended up going in the second round to Buffalo is Brendan Gooley from the Prince Albert Raiders.
Yeah, and Laurent Dauphin, if I can remember going back to a couple of years ago in Halifax, ended up scoring the game-winning goal in the lowest-scoring top prospects game ever. And what did he end up in the third round? I think he's gotten to his first National Hockey League game with Arizona this year. So those things do happen, and it's up to guys to take advantage of those situations where you're a late add. Even Liam Herbst last year, although it hasn't quite worked out for him in goal, when Blackwood was out, he ended up coming in and played extremely well, and I think it earned him an invite to a camp. It didn't necessarily lead to a contract, but yeah, those situations do happen, and sometimes, Jeff, for some kids it's better. It's better for those guys to just not think about things, why or why not, just show up in a plane, go out and play. And I'll say this with all honesty. We talked to Paul McFarland before the game on Sunday, and he now plans his road trips for his team to arrive almost a little bit later than normal, later than most teams, on the precipice of kind of getting there, taping your stick, putting the skates on, and going out to the skate. He goes, our guys react better when they don't have time to think about the game or hang out or go and visit people before the game when we're arriving too early. So we set it up so that we arrive basically just in time to do what you got to do and go out and play the game. And their road record indicates pretty good success in doing that.
It's forward-thinking, Coach. On that, we'll let you go. Sam, a pleasure as always. We'll watch you on television. St. John facing off against Cape Breton, also Mississauga and Barrie on the weekend on Sportsnet. Thanks, Sammy.
Okay, Jeff, thanks. Take care.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk to a couple of CHL players, Nathan Bastian of the Mississauga Steelheads of the OHL, Matthew Barzal, Islanders prospect and first-line center for the Seattle Thunderbirds. That's all still to come. But joining us next after the break, we're going to the Maritimes Division of the QMJHL to say good evening, good afternoon, or good morning, depending on when you're listening to this podcast, to St. John's Sea Dogs General Manager Daryl Young. We'll be right back.
He drops it to Shabbat. Shabbat with some moves just inside the blue line. Shoots it and they score!
Wow.
Thomas Shabbat from just inside the blue line.
Our next guest is the general manager of the St. John's Sea Dogs of the Maritimes Division of the QMJHL, the surging Sea Dogs, I might add. 8-0-1 is a recent streak, 7 in a row as we tape this podcast right now. Daryl Young, how has this team, ravaged by injuries and suspensions, we'll throw that in as well, been able to pull off this little string of wins?
Well, I think there's a couple things that happened. First of all, we knew that going into the season, the greatest challenge are new head coach Danny Flynn here was building a team that could learn how to win. We know we had a lot of talent. We had 7 players drafted in National Hockey League this past summer, and we got a couple more this summer going to be drafted. So we know we always knew we had talent, just a matter of molding into a group. And part of that was acquiring Matt Murphy from Quebec Ramparts, and Matt won the Memorial Cup with Halifax, and he also went to the Memorial Cup last year with Quebec. So he's been through the winning in the past, and he knows how to win. And since he came in December, he's been a real steadying factor on the blue line. But also, you know, we got some great depth of young players that have played up from the Quebec Midget League and the Maritime Midget Leagues, and our power plays have been going on. First part of the year, the first 30 games were around 10-12%, and the last 15 games or 10 games especially, we've been up around 25-30%. So those things have all helped us win a few games.
You know, and there's a couple more things I think you can probably throw into that mix as well. Marc-Antoine Turcotte has been fantastic for you guys in net.
Oh, no question. You know, Mark has never been a starter in major junior hockey. Matter of fact, he came in last year as a 19-year-old. He backed up Montembaum in Blainville and did a great job. And we've watched him a few times. We liked how he played, and we traded down from the 45th pick to the 56th pick in the draft, and we also acquired him in the meantime. So he's been a great influence back there. He's played, especially early in the year season. When we were struggling defensively, he kept it four together.
Being joined by Daryl Young, the St. John Sea Dogs general manager, in action on Friday night hockey against the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles, Charlottetown on the horizon before that. It seems as if, you know, you look at the schedule and you never want to, you know, count any blessings, but it seems that for whatever reason, your squad has had Cape Breton's number this year. Is this just one of those fluke things for the season, or just a matter of we just have their number this year?
I never really thought much about it. We go game by game, but I know last year, for example, we had Halifax's number, and I think we beat them 7 or 8 times, and then Bathurst had our number, and Bathurst was finished close to the bottom last year. And this year, it just seems like we're winning the games against Cape Breton. We have to be to win, and there's teams like Bathurst again this year giving us a hard time. Halifax is giving us a real match. But it's just one of those things. I think that the players know that Cape Breton is right behind us in the standings, and they're one of the teams that is challenging for the league and come playoff time. And we know we got to play our best against some of the best teams in the league.
What was trade deadline like for you this year? It seemed as if every time anyone was picking up the phone, the first thing out of someone else's mouth was 2 first-round picks. It seemed the prices this year, Daryl, were so exorbitant for players. What was it like from your chair?
Well, my head was spinning because we have 2 players, Alex Dorio, who's the goalie in Magog, who was the 9th pick overall and played for Canada at the World Under-17 Championships, and Cedric Perry, who's the 10th pick overall. He's playing at Levy, and both these players are players that every team, every time I talk about trade, teams are asking for them. You know, and we're looking at a team we're trying to build, and Dorio, the goalie, there's not as many high-quality goalies in the league this year or coming up in the next couple of years in our league, it seems like. But Dorio's one of them, and one team was willing to – one general manager says, I'll pay and I'll overpay, and I'll overpay on the overpay to get Dorio. I was shaking my head, and I said, you just proved to me why I should keep him. right? You know, you know, we're trying to build a team here to win in the next couple of years, and he's a big part of it. But anytime you talk to anybody, we had one defenseman that on another team that we liked, who was 18, that was drafted in the National Hockey League, that I know he's going to sign a pro contract to not play as an overage, but the team wanted a first round this year, first round next year. If he comes back as an overage, they wanted a second round in 2018, and they wanted a good 98-born player. And just walk away, right? Just walk.
Wow.
We were fortunate in the fact that we've had so many injuries this year, as you mentioned earlier, that we knew that, you know, Sam Devon Falls is coming back this year. He's drafted by Philly and only played five games. Yeah. He's our top centerman. He's coming back this weekend. We got, you know, Mukhaji Mamo, Tampa Bay's draft pick, was out for 15 games, and he's finished up his suspensions this year. You know, we lost Saboril and Jacob Saboril, Boston's first-round pick, and Shabbat, Ottawa's first-round pick. We lost them since November 27th, and they didn't come back until the 10th of January, basically. So we lost them for a long periods of time. We just knew that over time, and Matt Green, another young player that's really upcoming for us, a 98-born, Luke Green's twin brother, who's a really good centerman, who's skilled down on the face-off circle. And we lost all those guys for a period of time. We knew that we didn't have to make many moves because those guys were all coming back. It was like adding pieces, you know, trading for pieces, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I've been here for 2 years this March, and I look at our team, and there's only, I think, there's five players left from when I joined the team. So we made trades in the past. You know, and I try to explain to our kids, you know, we acquired Turcotte at the draft. You know, we brought in Joe Valeno, the exceptional status player. We brought in Felix in our first pick in the European draft. We brought in Matt Murphy. We brought in Sam Provorovsky from from the OHL's Novarage, who's been a good player. So we've acquired players over the last 8 months that are helping us win. We're not going to spend foolishly to try to win it when we have something that's good that's happening here that's going to build over the next couple of years.
You mentioned the Green family a second ago, and I want to ask you about Luke. And before that, within this context, you bring in Matt Murphy, Quebec hosting the Memorial Cup last year, won it with Halifax. He's a winner. You have Zaboral and Shabbat. Those are two first-round draft picks in the NHL. That must be kind of a great environment for someone like Luke Green, who, you know, this time next week is going to be in Vancouver for the top prospects game. This must be a great place for Luke Green to be learning his craft right now.
Oh, there's no question. You know, last year this time, you know, Thomas Chabot was telling us he wanted to be a first-round pick, and we said, well, Jakub Saboril, everybody has him rated as a first-round pick. If you want to be better than anybody, you got to be better than him if you want to be a first-round pick, because there's your measuring stick. It's right there in front of you every day. Outwork him every day. Be better than him every day, and you'll get to that first-round status, and that's what you want. For a guy like Luke, you know, he looks at these two guys and says, well, I got to outwork those two guys if I want to be a first-round pick. And I got to play as well as they play if I want to be a first-round or a high draft pick. And Matt Murphy's been a great common influence on him because he allows Luke to take off a little bit more, do his thing in terms of the offensive part of it and jump in the attack a bit more, being comfortable knowing that he has Matt Murphy back there to cover for him and support him when he needs it.
Being joined by Darryl Young, he's the general manager of the St. John's Sea Dogs. As I mentioned, next week is top prospects time. How much stock do you think people should put in what happens next Thursday in Vancouver? Sometimes players can really force a game that's not there. Sometimes players can kind of hurt themselves. Sometimes certainly they can help themselves. We looked at what Travis Konecny did last year, the top prospects game. How important is this one for Luke Green? It is important. It's not at all important, or it's just a little bit important.
It's just a little bit important. You know, I think when you look at it from an NHL scouting point of view, they're looking at the sum of his work in terms of the over the course of the season. I think the most scouts have noticed how much he's improved from last year to this year in terms of his 200-foot game and. Knowing when to jump, not to jump, being better defensively, being stronger defensively. You know, he hasn't put up the numbers people expected, But that's something that we're not concerned with, because he plays the second power play, not the first power play. He's been playing, especially with players, with Shabbat and Saboro gone to the World Juniors. Mm-hmm. Him and Matt Murphy have been our shutdown pair. And yet he's still contributing offensively, and he's still something like a plus 10, a plus 10 or 11 for us. So he's learned to play the game, the 200-foot game in all three zones. And I think the scouts, when they come in every day, they're recognizing that. And, I think look at the prospects game will allow him just the free flow like he liked to do when he was in Bantam or Midget. Mm-hmm. And show his skill, because he's got exceptional skating skills. He's got great puck skills. He can make passes that other guys would dream about making. He can beat players one-on-one. He can elude the forecheck with his skating. But he's got a great skill package. He's probably going to be, when he plays pro, I think he'll be in the top 5% of skaters in the National Hockey League.
And it never hurts being a right-hand shot that can move the puck and can and has offensive instincts in the game right now, right, Darryl?
Oh, no question. That's everybody asks is, there was him and there's Samuel Girard, who was another highly rated player, left-hand shot defenseman. But when you look around the Quebec League in January, you look at players like, Jeremy Waugh with Sherbrooke, and you look at Nicholas Melosh now with Gatineau. Outside of those two, and there's only maybe one or two really good offensive right-hand shot defensemen. LaValle and Cape Breton is one of them. Laird and Chicoutimi. So there's only four or five really good offensive defensemen that shoot right in this league. So when it came down to choosing between Girard and Green, the really determining factor was that, Luke shot right, and we knew that we could find a left-hand guy with skill. But to find a right-hand shot with skill like that is pretty hard to do, especially in the Quebec League.
Yep, you got a great one. Darryl, best of luck against the Islanders and the Screaming Eagles later on this week. We'll catch up down the road.
Great, Jeff. Appreciate it.
That's Darryl Young, the general manager of the St. John Sea Dogs, in action on Friday Night Hockey against the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles. When we come back, a couple of pretty powerful CHL players. Matthew Barzal, standout Islanders draft pick, first-line center of the Seattle Thunderbirds, and then projected first-round draft pick winger with the Mississauga Steelheads, playing on that top line with Michael McLeod and Alexander Nylander. Nathan Bastian joins the Junior Podcast here in moments.
Oh, my darling, the legs under this table.
Barzal will skate up ice. Going back as Barzal puts it. Vince shot, scores! What a play by Matt Barzal! He split the Everett defense and beat Hart top shelf right corner. Woo-hoo!
Out hit Kingston so far. Kingston, one of the most penalized teams, the second most penalized in the OHL. Hard shot for Nylander, the rebound for Bastian. And Nathan Bastian puts the Steelheads ahead.
Our next guest is a forward with the Seattle Thunderbirds, one of the powerhouses in the Western Hockey League, also a 16th overall draft pick of the New York Islanders in the NHL. Matthew Barzal, welcome to Junior. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm doing well, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure is all mine, and I want to get to a lot of things. I mean, your career in the Western League, your career internationally is fascinating as well. But I want to start with, whenever I talk with anyone around the Western Hockey League and I say, what do you think of Matt Barzal? They all come back with the same thing. First of all, he's a great guy. Like, it seems as if you're like the most beloved guy in the Western Hockey League, whether it's your own team or other teams around the Western Hockey League. I'll ask you point blank, Matt, what gives with that?
I wouldn't go that far. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to play with teams like Team Canada and, Team BC, and got to meet a lot of the top guys throughout the league. And, I could say the same thing about, 90% of the guys in this league. So for them to be saying that stuff about me is, it's an honor, and it's real good to hear. But at the same time, I mean, everyone that I've met down the road playing on those high-end teams, and they've all been great guys. And, I'm a pretty outgoing guy. So when I am on those teams, I mix with everyone quite well.
Yeah, that seems to be the vibe about you, both with your own squad and with everyone else in the Western League. One thing that I think a lot of people have noticed this season, initially, on first glance, when people watch your game, you're a guy that creates plays, wonderfully creative, a wonderful passer, you're a playmaker. But this year it seems as if, I don't know if it's just my eye or other people's eyes, it seems as if you're trying to shoot more. Is that something going into this season that you're trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when I went to New York's camp, you know, you watch these pros and they shoot from everywhere. I mean, John Tavares, this guy doesn't miss. So, you know, I know at the next level you can be a passer, but you have to, you know, at the end of the day, you have to score goals to, you know, to make an impact. And I've definitely been trying to shoot more. I think when I was with Team Canada, Dave Lowry really made it a point for me to shoot more and not pass up any chances. So I think, you know, this year I've been trying to get more pucks on net, and so far it's been going pretty well.
Now, having said that, that pass you made, I think it was on the first goal yesterday, last night against Saskatoon, is one for the ages. I mean, there's a real battery with players in the OHL. You think of Ryan McInnes and Jeremy Bracco have a nice little give and take going throughout the league. But how did, I mean, that, can you just, for a second, can you describe what happened on that play? Because that's one of the most glorious passes we've seen all season.
Yeah, it was, I mean, it was just kind of a broken play. D-man threw it behind the net, and I caught it, and just I felt the guy right on my back, and I kind of backhanded off the net and spun off my guy, and
awesome.
I seen Nolan Volkan sitting in front, but I seen it right through his legs. There was a stick of Donovan Niles, and I just found his stick, and he buried it pretty well. I think it was like almost bar down. So you know, it's good for them to get open, and it's easy for me to find those guys. But like, yeah, I just spun off him on the back of the net, and he was sitting right there in the slot.
So let me ask you then, when you make a play like that, does it even surprise you? Because, I mean, everybody who saw that just goes away shaking their head. Like, do you ever go back to the bench and say, how the hell did I just do that?
I mean, I don't know if I, you know, I think about it too much. I mean, I like to watch a lot of videos, so I'll watch it after the game, kind of how I did it. But in the moment, I'm just like, I'm just happy we scored, you know. It's just, you know, it's a fun feeling. So I don't think about it too much during the game, but after the game, I like to check out the highlights and see what's going on.
Is that one of those situations where you want to watch all of it? I mean, at the NHL level, I'm not sure what it's like with you and the T-Birds, but at the NHL level, I mean, every player in the dressing room has all of their shifts on an iPad when they get back into the room. Like, are you someone that wants to go and watch every single shift that you just had in the game to go through it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you know, sometimes I'll watch replays of game two or three times. If we have a week off, you know, I'll go back and watch a game from, you know, 2-3 weeks ago. Just watch my shifts, and you know, sometimes I'm not even analyzing it. I just like watching, you know, my game, and I just like, you know, watching what I can do in certain places, and you know, things I can improve on. I think video is a great tool to get better. And if I'm usually not watching my shifts, I'm watching, you know, highlights of Claude Giroux or Datsyuk or Kane. So I just really like watching the game.
Who's your favorites now? I mean, you mentioned some of the heavyweights right up there, and, you know, one of the players in the NHL that's catching everybody's eye now is Vladimir Tarasenko of St. Louis. Who are some of the guys you like watching in the NHL?
Well, I mean, Tarasenko, he's nasty. I mean, you know, that guy scores some goals, you just shake your head. So I like watching a lot of Patrick Kane. That guy creates space, like, everywhere around the ice, whether it's in his own end and or the neutral zone or the O zone. I mean, this guy always has space, and he's always spinning off checks, so I like his game a lot. And you know, Claude Giroux, I think that's a guy I want to model my game after, and that's the kind of player I want to be at the next level. So those two guys especially. And I mean, you know, I've watched every video of Datsyuk, Malkin, you know, any of those top guys. So I just like watching a lot of that stuff. I like watching how these guys, you know, create space and you know stick handle the puck or shoot the puck. So I just like doing that kind of stuff.
No, yeah, you're not the only one, though you'll probably be doing it at the NHL level sooner than later. Speaking of the NHL, and you mentioned Islanders camp a second ago, what was that experience like for you? I mean, that's sort of like one of the great first experiences that a hockey player has, where you kind of realize what it takes to get to the next level. What was Islanders camp like for you?
It was awesome. I, you know, it was a real eye-opener, just in terms of, you know, how hard these pros work, and you know, they don't even take a practice off. So, I mean, you know, I took a lot away from John Tavares, just how hard this guy works and what a great leader he is. I mean, you know, he doesn't even take a shot off, this guy. He, you know, every shot, empty net, you know, goalie net, everything is hard, and he's picking corners. So just stuff like that, you know, you got that, you know, that's why they're at the next level. And guys like me are still in junior, just that consistency, every practice, every game. And that's something I've really been working on, you know, this year, is just, you know, scoring goals in practice, not taking anything lightly, and just you know, working hard every time I'm on the ice.
What do you think you need to work on? I mean, obviously this year you went in saying, hey, I need to shoot more, but what are the kinds of things that you think you need to work on to go to the next level? I mean, your playmaking is excellent, your skating is excellent. Where in your mind, though, do you think you need to get to?
I'd say my physical, you know, aspect's a big thing. I mean, those guys at the next level, I mean, they're huge, right? Everyone's, you know, 210 pounds, 7% body fat. So, you know, I'd like to put on some good weight this summer, get stronger, upper body especially. And aside from that, I mean, everything kind of, you know, needs to get better. You know, you go in and everyone shoots harder than me. You know, everyone's just as fast. So you got to do things that could separate you. I mean, that's just, you know, I got to, you know, play to my strengths. I think is a big thing when you go to those kind of camps. You know, you sometimes go in hesitant, and you know, maybe you try to take on a different role, but you got to go in confident and just play your game. I think, you know, the big thing at the next level, you just got to be confident and you know, play your strengths.
Take me back to your draft day and one specific moment. Edmonton trades number 16 and 33 to the Islanders for Griffin Reinhart. At that point, did you know it was going to be you at 16, or did you not know until the Islanders went up?
I had a really good feeling, to be honest. I had a good meeting with the Islanders. I remember their Western scout had said that he really liked my game. And but the thing is, you know, before on draft day, they only had a third round pick. So,
yep.
I mean, if you told me one team that I wasn't going to go to, it probably would have been the Islanders. So for them to jump up and grab me, I mean, it just shows that you know, they wanted me, and that's something you want as a prospect. You know, you want a team that's going to, you know, want to develop you and want the best for you. So, I mean, I didn't expect it at all, but as soon as they traded up, I kind of had a gut feeling that that my name was going to be next.
And a solid pick for the Islanders, being joined by Matthew Barzal of the Seattle Thunderbirds. Talk to us a little bit about growing up and playing hockey. The first time that you sort of appeared on my radar, you were playing in Burnaby. It was your bantam year, draft year, first overall, 2012 in the Western League. You put up like 155 points that season. At what point in your mind, though, Matt, did you think, I've got a real shot at this?
I mean, I always say it. I go back to when I was, I think, 11 or 10. You probably heard of it, the Brick Tournament in Edmonton.
Oh, yeah.
Playing the mall. And, I mean, guys like, you know, Taze and Phaneuf and Bomeister, all these guys have played in this tournament. And I actually, our team won. We had a great team that year, and a lot of guys playing in the dub now. But I actually was the MVP of that tournament. And I think right then, you know, you play with, you know, you see a lot of these top guys that were playing there. I mean, you know, some names, you know, Dylan Strome, Mitch Marner, Noah Hanifin. I mean, you know, these guys were all there, and I was the MVP of the tournament. So I kind of had a thought that, you know, maybe hockey, you know, I could play in the NHL one day. And, you know, I think right from that age, you know, that's what I wanted to do, and I really wanted to be a player.
Tell us a little bit about the Thunderbirds. It's one of those teams that on this podcast we've said, you know, whenever we talk about, you know, top 10 rankings and teams for Red Deer in the Memorial Cup, we always say, don't sleep on Seattle. You know, they may not get the headlines that other teams do, but don't sleep on the T-Birds. From your point of view, where's your squad at right now? I mean, you're in a real tough division. Everett's looking good. Portland's, you know, always a good squad. Where do you think your T-Birds are at right now?
I mean, I think we're playing some pretty good hockey. We're a little bit inconsistent with road games right now, but all year we've shown we're a good team at home, and you know, we got some real good young players, and I think you know, we're looking to make a splash. Obviously, you know, our goal for the season is to win the division, and you know, we know it's going to be tight. I mean, Portland's playing good hockey right now. Everett's obviously a real structured team, and even Spokane and Tri-City, those games are not easy. You know, those guys play hard every night, so you know, we got to come prepared every night, but I think as a team, you know, we're making steps, and I think we're, you know, we're playing some pretty good hockey.
You know, we talked a lot on this podcast a couple of weeks ago about NHL, former NHL players turned coaches in the Western Hockey League, and you have one in Steve Konowalczyk, who is a really good, you know, solid NHLer, nothing flashy or splashy about Konowalczyk, just a really, you know, a solid guy that can fit in on just about every team in the NHL. What's he like as a coach for you?
I mean, one thing, you know, I think that anyone knows Steve is that he's a real hard worker, and he definitely, you know, puts that down on his players. So, you know, when I was younger, I mean, I kind of had a little bit of leeway with back checking and that kind of stuff because I was scoring goals. But here, you know, Steve's really, you know, modeled my kind of game into a pro, more pro style with how I play defensively and how I back check and finishing checks and that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's done a lot for me in that sense, and you know, he's definitely made me more of a consistent player as well. He needs you to work hard every day at practice, you know, in the gym. You can't take a day off here, which is, you know, I mean, obviously sometimes you're sore and that kind of stuff, but it's going to make you a better person and player at the end of the day, and he does a great job of that.
You know, he was on, as you well know, the 1992 World Junior Squad for USA. This is when the United States had a hard time medaling, and they picked up a bronze back in 92. Did he give you any advice as you headed off to Helsinki?
No, we obviously he's American, and he's probably cheering for the Americans. So he just said, you know, go win silver. But it's just a fun, you know, a little joke he made. And I mean, you know, he's obviously had that experience, but. Yeah, that was basically it. Just kind of gave me a little jab, and it's all fun.
What was the experience like for you? I mean, ultimately, you know, you didn't come back with the big prize, but I mean, you can't go to a tournament like that and not come back a better hockey player, a smarter hockey player, someone that's learned something. What was Helsinki like for you?
It was great. I mean, obviously, it was tough, you know, the position we finished in, but you know, I learned a lot. Just how big of a stage it really is. I mean, you're back home and you watch it every game, and you're up early watching the hockey. But, you know, when you're over there, you don't realize how many people are actually following you and how many people, you know, care so much. It's unbelievable the support we got from Canada. And, you know, Dave Lowry, you know, he helped my game. You know, obviously I learned things from him. And, you know, anytime you can play with guys as skilled as Braden Point and Marner and Strome, you know, you're going to learn things. So watch those guys pretty closely. And, you know, I think I picked up a lot and things that I'm going to take back to Seattle and help my game.
Those will be people you break in the NHL with. Before we wrap up here, I want you to talk a little bit about Ryan Gropp specifically, a New York Rangers pick, and Ethan Bear as well. I mean, your team has some real high-end talent on it. Those are two of the more outstanding names to casual Western Hockey League fans. For people that may not have seen them play, how would you describe Ryan and how would you describe Ethan?
Ryan's, you know, he's one of my best buddies. Same with Ethan, actually. Been really good friends with them the last 2 years. And, you know, Ryan's a big, real fast winger who can really shoot the puck. And we've obviously gelled well together just because, you know, we kind of have that off and on ice chemistry. I don't think there's a guy maybe in the dub that has a better release and shot than him. So you combine that with his speed and, you know, you got a pretty good winger to play with. So he's really easy to play with. And Ethan, you know, he's a steady, you know, offense. I think he's got more offense than people think. He's obviously shown it this year with his points and power play points. So he's a real good offensive, you know, strong D-man. And I think both of them have real long futures in hockey.
And on that, we'll let you go. Matt, thanks so much for stopping by. Best of luck the rest of this season with the Thunderbirds into the playoffs and hopefully into Red Deer for the MasterCard Memorial Cup. We'll catch up soon.
All right. Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it.
That's Matthew Barzal of the Seattle Thunderbirds. From the Western Hockey League, we go to the OHL to say hello to a Steelhead. Being joined now by Nathan Bastian of the Mississauga Steelheads. Nathan, thanks so much for doing this. First of all, how was practice today? I understand your head coach, James Boyd, really put you guys through it today.
Yeah, we were out there for a while. It was we're just getting ready for a big weekend, and expected to have some long practices earlier in the week, and Just doing some touch-ups, and we're focusing a lot on our D-zone today.
I'm curious. So we had you on Sportsnet on Sunday. We'll have you again next Sunday, our first couple of viewings here, the Mississauga Steelheads. Does your head coach, James White, talk to you at all about, you know, the big TV trucks rolling in, what to expect, how not to get distracted, what do TV timeouts mean for flow of game? Does your coach talk to you about that at all?
Yeah, it's more just... during the TV timeouts, we're not used to as many breaks as we get during the Sportsnet games, and it's more or less don't lose our focus, and don't let the momentum of the game change just because there's a break in it.
Is it tough though? I mean, I can imagine even just, you know, watching it and being part of the broadcast. I can imagine being on the ice and saying, "Man, this kind of sucks having to stand around for so long here."
Yeah, we're not used to it. The first time that we got the chance to do that was at the Super Series there, and it was definitely a lot different. There's some times when you're heading back out on the ice, and then all of a sudden you turn around and you go back to the bench, you don't realize there's another 4 minute TV timeout.
It's challenging for a lot of players. Hey, at this time next week we'll all be in Vancouver. Sportsnet will, you will as well, for the CHL Top Prospects game. How much? I know you have games this weekend, but how much do you have top prospects in the back of your mind?
Yeah, I'm so excited to get on the plane and head out there and got our itineraries and stuff, and it's pretty exciting to look forward to. But like you said, anything to do with the Steelheads comes first, and we have three huge games in our conference that we need to win this weekend.
I want to go back to last year. Actually, I want to go back to your draft year when you drafted in seventh round by Mississauga. You sort of popped up on my radar about a year and a half ago when people started talking about you. Here's this seventh round draft pick, a kid out of Kitchener. And since you were selected in the seventh round, I think you've grown 6 or 7 inches and put on about 40 pounds. I guess it's the classic story of the late bloomer for you, Nathan.
Yeah, I think so. For me being a draft pick out of Kitchener there, I was one of the kids who going into the draft day. I was just hoping to be a draft pick and be a seventh round pick. It was so exciting. And since there, I think it came a long way. And this year, it's just like my minor major year again. And I don't really know what to expect, but I'm just playing hockey and I'm having a lot of fun with it.
When did things really start to click for you? I mean, you're playing on a great line in Mississauga. Everyone's talking about you. Your stock is rising in the draft. At what point in your mind did things, you know, really just finally settle in and, you know, allow you to be this hockey player that you're slowly becoming here? When did it click?
Yeah, well, when I first got here, Boise's been so good to me ever since day one. And my first year when I was just a call-up, I was just trying to get my feet wet in the league, and I had a good season last year, but I think things really started to click this year, and I have a lot more confidence in my game, and I go into every building thinking that I'm going to do some damage, and our line is we're having a lot of fun, and I think it's pretty obvious you can see that we're doing well out there, and I think things really started clicking at some point during this year.
You know, it's an outstanding line. If people haven't seen it, it's Michael McLeod, Alexander Nylander, and Nathan Bastian are our guests. What, in your mind, makes that line work so well?
I think we all contribute in our own ways. Mikey might be the fastest skater in the whole league, and then, you know, if I put it right on Alex's tape, it's probably in the back of the net. So. Mm-hmm. We all add our own stuff to the line, and we seem to be clicking.
What's it like having Alex's dad behind the bench, former longtime NHLer Michael Nylander? He was I'm not sure if you ever had a chance to watch him play growing up, but he was a real special player in the NHL.
Yeah.
What's it like having him behind the bench?
No, it's awesome. It's good for all of us. It's good knowing when you're hearing stuff coming from a coach. They've been there, they've been through it, and it makes it a lot easier to trust them. Michael works with us so much. He works with everyone. He's our skills guy before practices. He's our power play guy, and I think everything he brings to the table is really important.
You know, on television on the weekend in one of the intermissions, we were talking about you and we were talking about your line. And I said, you know, a couple of the comparisons you can make for your style of game and how you play. Two players jump to mind. One is Jeff Carter and the other is Mark Scheifele. Who are some of the guys that you would pattern your game after? And would it be either of those two guys, for a matter of fact?
Yeah, I think a big right hand shot, just like you said, like a Scheifele or a Carter, and maybe a Getzlaff, a leader on the ice, and someone who's maybe not the flashiest guy, but prides himself on doing the little things well, like myself. And I think those guys are like that. And Scheifele, I think, is a really good comparison, just being from the same Kitchener area, and we're both seventh round picks in the OHL, and some of the stuff just seems crazy how it's been lining up with the comparison between me and Scheifele.
Hey, I'm curious, at what point did NHL teams start asking James Boyd if they could talk to you after games?
I think there was one team last year, but mostly this year. And when somebody comes to talk to me, there's a bunch of us here that they come rolling through to talk to.
Yeah. What were some of those first conversations like? Did it seem kind of surreal?
Yeah, it's almost, it's like you don't really, most of them are the same, and you really know how much they mean. Obviously, they're important, but when they're asking you, you know, like, what your parents do for a living and stuff. You're kind of sitting there and you don't really know what the purpose is, but they just want to get to know you, and it's all good stuff.
Wheelie, get into your draft interviews and some of the questions. I'm sure you've heard some of the stories of some of the weird things that the teams will ask. So get ready for it, Nathan. Listen, thanks so much for doing this. It was a delight to watch you on Sunday. And I look forward to this weekend on Sportsnet for another big game for the Steelheads. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks for having me.
And that's it. Another edition of your favorite CHL podcast, Junior. That's in the books. Want to thank all of our guests, namely Sam Cosentino, lead analyst for the CHL on Sportsnet. Daryl Young, St. John Sea Dogs general manager. Don't forget Sea Dogs in action Friday night hockey against the Cape Breton Screaming Eagles. A pair of hockey players stopped by as well. Matthew Barzell of the Seattle Thunderbirds and Nathan Bastian of the Mississauga Steelheads. A big thank you to both of those two gentlemen. On behalf of our producer, Sam McKee, Jeff Merrick signing off. We're back in 7 days from Vancouver, home of the CHL Top Prospects game, for another edition of Junior next week. Enjoy the CHL action. We'll talk to you in 7 days.
Six cents of memory runs a river near all the trouble up the parkway, getting frozen in the snow. Watch you see as much.
You've been listening to Junior, the podcast for CHL fans. Find us at sportsnet.ca. Even better, subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.